Hello, and welcome to Pod Space Nine, the last stop for trash in the Alpha Quadrant. This is a rewatch podcast for Star Trek Deep Space Nine, featuring two veteran viewers and one newbie. My name is Justin, and I'll be your way team commander. Joining me is my science officer, Anna, with our acting ensign, Jude. Jude, Anna, spaceship! Spaceship! Spaceship!
So, one of my favorite ships is here. They took the biggest warp engine they could find, and they duct taped a gun to it and called it the Defiant, and it is my baby, and I love it.
I'm sorry. They scrapped a lot of guns. They took a lot of guns and strapped an engine to it.
It should be noted that I was not 100% sure that the Defiant was going to be around for a while, because it does sort of feel like it gets blown to shit in this episode.
Oh no, in these two episodes. Just gets blown to shit a lot.
Yeah, no, this is, you cannot kill this thing.
But from the reaction that these two had to it, I got the sense that the Defiant's not going anywhere.
It's like how the Voyager, you know, once or twice a season just gets just almost destroyed, like down to the studs, and like that is the vibe of the Defiant as well. Mm. And we all love the Defiant for it.
I think the Defiant is my favorite Starfleet ship, which I hate that it's like it's the one warship, but it's also like it's that little ship that just goes.
It's the little ship that could, right?
Yeah, no, I mean, like, it's like, because it's like all the other ships are like, oh, they're big ships, they're like the Enterprise is always like, you know, the big flagship. I mean, Voyager is just, I don't like the look of Voyager. I'm sorry. The Intrepid class is just not my vibe. But
yeah,
the little garbage can with guns. I love it so much.
And it's, I love it for in part the same reason that I love the Protostar. Which is like that it just absolutely feels like the most like dumbass Starfleet engineer thing, God. Right? Like the Protostar is, you know, spoilers for those of you who haven't seen Prodigy, but for the Protostar, they basically are like, okay, well, what happens if you just like shove a Protostar into a ship and use it as a power source? It'll totally work fine, right? It's like, you know, I have this vision of like some Starfleet engineer being like looking at how the Romulans power their goddamn ships and being like, you know what? What if instead of putting a miniature black hole, we put a miniature star? That's probably fine. And I love the Defiant for exactly the same reason that it's like, it's just like the most unhinged like Starfleet engineer thing of like, let's take the biggest warp engine that we can find and the biggest guns that we can find and duct tape them together and call it a ship.
The best part is, we know from like the actual text of this episode who was the dumbass engineer who thought this up.
Yes, it was Sisko.
Benjamin Sisko.
Oh yeah.
Benjamin Sisko knows how to min-max a ship.
Yes. And I love that. I love the degree to which the Defiant is cursed, right? And I'm not talking cursed in terms of like bad shit happening to it. I'm talking cursed in terms of like that it's just a terrible ship.
I mean, it's a really good ship, but it's also a terrible.
Yeah.
I like, it's bad vibes.
Like, it's one of those, it's like if you ever had like, you know, the car that like you really love and it's like very reliable and everything, but like every time you take somebody in it, you're like, yeah, you know, it just like vibrates a little bit when we hit exactly 57 miles an hour. It's fine. Don't worry about it.
Mm-hmm.
The Defiant has that energy.
I get you.
So if you haven't figured this out, listeners, we are watching tonight the first two episodes of season three, The Search Part 1 and 2. I just have a lot of emotions.
I thought that The Search was referring to the search for the Defiant, the way you guys talked about these episodes before I watched them. Because all I knew about these episodes was that they were like where the Defiant comes in. So I legitimately,
yes,
thought
we care about one thing, and it is ships.
I don't care about some gooey motherfuckers. I don't care about the Jem'Hadar. I care about my spaceship.
Welcome to season three, baby.
Yeah.
We got ships.
Because everybody's like, well, the runabouts are shit, and we don't like shooting footage in it. That's like legitimately part of it. Is that like the runabouts were just a really cramped set and it was hard to shoot footage in it.
Really? Interesting.
Yeah.
I mean, that makes sense. They look, they don't look particularly spacious.
I mean, we call them the minivan for a reason.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's funny.
But yeah, I'm going
to
take...
We got to get Scott on to talk about ships sometime.
Yeah, we're gonna have to do... Listeners, we've been waiting until the Defiant showed up. And I said at one point we were going to do Starship Smasher Pass, and I feel that day is coming soon.
Yes.
Yeah.
So the search part one is teleplay by Ronald D. Moore. And story by Ira Stephen Baer and Robert Hewitt Wolf, directed by Kim Friedman. So, new season, and after our previously on Majel Barrett voiceover, Kira and the crew are looking into things and simulations of Jim Hadar infiltration. It is grim. However, as they're discussing things, something pings the station sensors. Dax thinks it's a cloak ship, and Kira takes the station to red alert. The ship decloaks, and... it's a Starfleet ship! to the crew's confusion, Sisko hails them. He says he's brought back a little surprise for the Dominion, and it's called the Defiant. In the wardroom, which I think this is the first time we ever see the wardroom set. Sisko explains that the Defiant was the first of its kind, a Federation warship. It was originally created to fight the Borg, but the Borg threat became less urgent after... everything that happened in Best of Both Worlds Part 1 and 2. and the Defiant had some intense shakedown issues. It is classified as an escort vessel with none of the creature comforts of your typical Starfleet ship.
But it is real sexy, though, as befitting an escort.
Fuck. They are going to use the Defiant to go to the Gamma Quadrant and find the Founders so they can try to hash out some peace. Also joining this this mission is Subcommander Terul, a Romulan lady who is there to make sure that nobody fucking touches the cloaking device. And Commander Michael Eddington, a man who I will learn to just... who I'm restraining my, like, hate
of this
man.
We can't talk about Eddington. We can't talk about him yet.
He just, I mean, he exudes wet fart energy. and that's just for what we get in the first two episodes. And you hate him already. I love him. Odo thinks he's been relieved of command and storms out in a fit. Sisko points out that Odo's reluctance to work with Starfleet guidelines has made things difficult. And Odo says that he's just going to resign. Back in their quarters, Jake and Ben start talking about DS9 as home and how they brought Ben's art collection to the station. Kira goes to Odo and says that she wants to have Odo with them on the trip to the Gamma Quadrant. Sisko also summons Quark to have him there to help him with the Gamma Quadrant, since the Ferengi have business relations with Karma. When Quark balks, Sisko presents the Grand Nagus's scepter, makes Quark kiss it, and Quark agrees. Dax and Sisko talk about the issue, with Sisko admitting that their chances are slim, but better than fighting an invasion. Sisko talks about, after spending time on Earth for the past 2 months, we have a significant time skip between seasons, he feels different, he feels passionate about this. As they prepare to depart, Odo is there at the airlock requesting permission to come aboard. Sisko grants it, and the Defiant departs. They head to the Gamma Quadrant and cloak the Defiant. Odo is more than a little pissy at Quark when they have to be roommates when he has to regenerate, and the Defiant gets an early test of the cloak when two Jem Hadar warships are encountered. With Terul's guidance, they are able to remain undetected. When they talk with the Karma, they don't know how to contact the Founders, or even if they exist, but they report to the Vorta. The Karma direct them to a communications outpost, but when looking at a map, Odo is drawn to something called the Omarian Nebula. Kira comes to talk to Sisko about Odo, and Sisko reveals that Starfleet's been pressuring him to replace Odo for the last 2 years. Sisko does, however, want Odo to stay, but that Odo has to want to stay and work with him. They reach the Kalanon system with the Dominion's communication outpost and have Dax and O'Brien beam down to look at it. They find that most of the outgoing traffic is going to one location, but before they can find that, an alarm is tripped and a shield is raised around the communication station. The Jem Hadar swoop in on the station, and the Defiant is forced to retreat. When Sisko summons Odo, he refuses and Kira goes to talk to him. Odo says he needs to go to the Omarian Nebula. He's not sure why, but he needs to go there, like he's being pulled. As they talk, the ship is rocked. The Jem'Hadar have penetrated the cloak, and we are back to rocking sets and exploding consoles. We are so fucking back. This is Star Trek, baby.
It's not Star Trek without some good console sparks.
It, you know, like people doing the shake. You know, it's so good.
I have to say, there is nothing better than watching like a con panel of Star Trek actors and seeing them all do the shake simultaneously. Oh, God,
so funny. My favorite one is on Will Wheaton's tabletop series. They did Star Trek Catan on one episode with a bunch of Star Trek actors, and they were all able to do it just like immediately on cue.
That's amazing.
The Jem'Hadar troops beam aboard and subdue most of the crew. Kira is shot, and when she comes to, she's on a shuttle with Odo. He's taken them to the Amaria Nebula, where they find a rogue planet hiding there. They land the ship, and they find a big, gooey lake. A bunch of people emerge from that lake. They're shapeshifters. One of them welcomes Odo home.
Not a puddle of wet fascist, a pond of wet fascists.
A lake?
I can't disagree with anything you said about the Defiant. It is a dope looking little ship. I had a funny note when I was making my notes in real time as I was watching the episode. And like my second note is the Galaxy Class a warship, a science ship? Like I was curious how warships worked. And then like as Justin was commenting on my note, Sisko has like an actual conversation in the show about the fact that like the Enterprise or like the Federation doesn't really do warships, so it's an escort ship. Yeah. Wink. And I was like, all right, well, there you go. Question answered.
The idea was originally just to have like, I guess it was to have like 20 Defiants on standby to fuck up the Borg if they showed up.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
Yeah, down to clown.
Yeah.
I'm into it. I love the look of the Defiant. It is it's wild to me. I mean, we really do need to do that, like, smash or pass episode, yeah. Ship smash or pass episode. But it's wild to me that they have we were talking about this in the last episode, you guys were a little bit, about the fact that, like, the Klingons have... Some of the alien races kind of have a visual identity for their ships. Mm-hmm. But I think the Federation really has like a visual really identity.
Design yeah.
A design language for what is a Federation ship. And when they get that a little bit wrong, people who care know and can tell and get real unhappy about it. Scott Paladin. Talking directly to you, Scott Paladin. For example, we had a brief, it took like a day and a half on our internal Discord talking about ships once. And we talked about the future ships, the future Federation ships. And there was a sort of a universal consensus that they changed the visual language.
Goddamn disconnected nacelles.
I think it's just really interesting how the Defiant is wildly different in construction from anything else we've seen, but you would never question that it's a Federation ship.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
It has that. And I it's just a remark. I'm sure somebody has done their master's or doctoral thesis on the visual language of Federation starships, because it's so distinct and so specific. It's really great. And I think the Defiant is a really interesting example of showing how far you can take that language and still be very identifiable.
Yeah.
The Defiant doesn't have any of the visual signifiers of a Federation ship. It doesn't have a dome, or it doesn't have a saucer section. It doesn't have like external nacelle. Even.
Yeah.
It's like
it doesn't have
it's got angles. None of like the 24th century Starfleet designs really have like any sharp angles. But it's got a low profile. It's designed to do head-on engagements. And it's like, but it's still it's like it's a mixture of like just the right like colors almost. Like,
yeah.
And
see, I disagree with you, though.
Nipple thing that it has on the top too is like reminiscent of a saucer section, or like it's because it's got that like, you know, round and oblong section on the very top.
My first impression of the Defiant is that it looked like somebody took a saucer and then glued nacelles on, kind of like wings. And that was kind of what gave it, like, to me, that very much is the, in the sense that, like, that's not what it's doing.
You can't forget the nose, though. Like, I think you're exactly right, June, that, like, it does in many ways look like if you just cut the saucer off of a regular ship and, like, glued the nacelles on the sides. But you can't forget the nose.
Well, yeah, but I'm saying, like, it evokes the language of the saucer and the nacelles while being distinctly different. But they put just enough of that, like, the arcs of the saucer and the nacelles to put you in mind of that design language. It's really nicely done. Yeah, I like it.
It is interesting how it's like it is a tiny ship. I think we'll get this like actual number, but it is like the sort of the maximum crew size, or like the optimal running size for like a full crew is 40 people.
That's tiny.
Yeah.
Which for reference, Star Trek Enterprise, like the NX-01 Enterprise has like 85 people in it.
Yeah.
And that's a tiny ship. But it is, and there's like a lot of stuff in this episode of like you see how janky it is. Like Sisko orders coffee and just like he is like clearly like this sucks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Horrified by what he gets. And
but it's like, God, even the Cardassian replicators make better coffee.
Yeah, that's the funny part, is that the Cardassian replicators are better.
I like that the only thing it does well is shoot guns and go fast.
It doesn't replicate
coffee. It doesn't even have like most of the quarters aren't even like pressurized.
It's like its database isn't even finished.
Yeah.
Like Bashir is like, I have to bring my medical library on board. Like I got to stick like the Federation medical database on like 6 Kindles.
Yeah.
And the moment where Bashir is like, I will go to what like is laughingly called the med bay.
Yeah.
I love that ship. So this episode has a couple of the like things that you like mentioned or joked about, Jude, that like the ones that like just killed me and like, you know, caused me to like laugh, you know, mm-hmm. maniacally. The first being the, like, I wonder when they'll arm this station, because, you know, that's one of the problems in their simulations is that the station, like, does not really have, like, meaningful armaments.
Yeah.
It's, like, practically an unarmed stationary target.
Yeah.
So it's, like, when will they arm the station? Never. They just get in a warship.
Yeah.
To date.
The quote from Ira Stephen Bear was like in the DC Stack campaign is, we created villains who were that powerful, and all we had floating around is the thin red line of defense against the possible invading army were 3 runabouts, and we really liked blowing them up.
Oh, and the other one. So Jude, remember when you like joked about like Odo coming from like a species of wet fascists? Guess what? He comes from a species of wet fascists.
Yep.
He is one of the less fascist members of his species.
Yeah, that
we'll get into that in the next episode. But
yeah, that drove me nuts that I was forced to concede.
Maybe we should talk about this with the next up.
Yeah, after we'll get there. We'll get to Odo's.
But you finally hit a couple of the things that like killed me early on.
Yeah, it's like, oh,
that's funny. I liked aside from the Defiant, I really loved the moment, that early moment where Jake and Sisko are talking about how DS9 has become their home.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, which is the whole thing of like Sisko bringing out like his art collection so they can like, he can make it his, like,
these are his quarters now. This is his home.
Yeah.
Which is a delightful thing. It's like, oh, like, we don't see, like, we didn't see that before, but yeah, it's like thinking back on it, I'm like, yeah, there's all, like, it, whenever I think of Sisko's quarters, the art's there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then, and previously in the first two seasons, it's, they're very generic quarters.
Yeah. This is like, there was sort of an effort in the writer's room that they wanted to try to, like create more of a family and home feel for the crew, and like make it so that everybody on the crew sort of felt like family to each other. And I think it's something that we will continue to see, and I like it.
That's great. Yeah. I think it's very funny that the Defiant, I think this is in the, yeah, it is in this first episode, that the cloak on the Defiant lasts all of like a half an episode.
Yeah.
Before, because it gets busted.
Yeah.
A cloaking device that was originally developed for something that was using a black hole as a power source can't contain all the juice that the Defiant tried to pump out.
Yeah, I thought that was very funny.
The other thing that it's like, I is the comp badges change.
Really?
Yeah. It's like, it's the Starfleet, like the previous ones were the Starfleet Delta with like the little gold oval, and now it's like a little cutout like box behind it, because they change it for Voyager. And they just decide to do it across the board.
Interesting. Okay. Yeah.
That comm badge is going to be used for, like, basically everything through this run of Star Trek.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I see. Oh, yeah, yeah. I recognize that now.
Yeah. Which kind of looks like the Defiant.
A little bit.
A little bit.
The scene where Sisko is bullying
Quark
with the Negus's staff.
Oh, let's see.
It feels,
you should
retrospect,
hate it, but
in retrospect, after the last episode,
yeah,
where Quark is like complaining specifically about the fact that Sisko doesn't like him.
Yeah,
it feels weird.
God, why do you? Yeah, it's like you humans are always like shitting on us, Ferengi, and then Sisko gets the like Negus scepter. Is like, ha 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 ha.
Sisko's a very pragmatic person.
Well, so my interpretation of this is, it's basically Sisko saying, "It's not that I dislike Ferengi.
I just hate you. I just hate you.
It's you, and it's not even that I the sense you get from Sisko is, it's not even that he hates Quark, but it's that he has no qualms about using him. God, I don't want to justify the scene because it's so funny. It's so good. And then he makes him kiss the staff.
Yeah.
Oh my god, it's so good. And then they put Quark and Odo in quarters together, because they just
of course gotta do it.
Yeah.
Yep. Fan fiction. There is only one goo bucket.
Oh, man. Odo is a hot mess in this episode.
Oh, boy. Yeah. Wow. Like, his, like, absolute shit fit when Eddington, like, appears. And it's like, Odo, like, do you not remember what happened to the last one of these? Like,
yeah.
Like, you know, you would be, I will not say anything about the future prospects of Eddington and how long he remains on the show.
I just assume that Eddington is either a traitor or a scumbag and lasts six episodes max. We'll see.
My lips are sealed, buddy.
I mean, maybe I'm right, maybe I'm wrong, but I mean, his introduction in this episode is like, what, 8 seconds?
Yeah.
12 tops.
I think it's just because, the actor...
He has such intense scumbag energy in that scene that I just assumed that he was some kind of villain. He made me... Yeah, my assumption was that he was scum. Like,
I mean, it's just sort of the actor, like, Ken Marshall, who plays him, is just, yeah, no, he's just a little bit of a, It's like he has nice guy. He has like annoying nice guy face.
It's something.
Yeah.
But it's like, Odo, you know, buddy, you've been here before. Like Sisko has had your back before. Like, but Odo, at times like this, I sometimes like remind myself that Odo is in fact very young, and like I feel like he's having kind of like a, you know, teenage tantrum there, kind of.
Maybe a little bit.
Like, just in terms of, like, the energy behind it, I don't know. And, like, you know, sometimes Odo is able to, like, look at situations and, like, approach them rationally and, like, calm down. And sometimes he is not. It's just, that's just not a great combination with being a cop.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We mentioned this in the last one, but Jesus Christ, Sarek Lofton. Like, that growth spurt is... This is not the only one that will happen on the show.
Yeah, he goes from looking very much like a kid.
He's like baby, and then he's oh no, you're a teenager.
Yeah, yeah. I thought it was interesting the time jump there.
Yeah,
you feel that. I don't mind at all that. And it's, I mean, not like you can stop him or judge him for growing. He's a fucking kid. But
yeah,
like, I think it actually works well that he comes back from like a lengthy trip back to Earth. You know, he's gone for a couple of weeks and he's put on a couple inches. Like, that reads true to me. So
yeah, I'm not spoiling anything, but every season there are no end of season. There are no end of season part one, part twos. They did this with season one and two, is like the gap between season one and two, where between every season there is like an in-universe time skip, which I love.
Yeah,
like it lets them like set new status quos and do things that sort of naturally can happen, which I love it.
Yeah.
Are we ready to move on to part two?
I think so.
Yeah.
Anna, you want to take us away?
All right. So, part two. So, for this one, story by Ira Stephen Baer and Robert Hewitt Wolf, teleplay by Ira Stephen Baer, and directed by Jonathan Frakes.
Woohoo! Who we will see this season.
Riker.
Yep. I really love his directing work for Trek, honestly. Oh, yeah. He's done some bangers.
Yeah.
And just like overall a very solid quality level. Mm-hmm. But anyway, so, you know, Odo and Kira have arrived on the planet of the shapeshifters. And there's a female changeling who explains that this is their home and that Odo was very young when he left. The changeling explains that they are all part of what's called the Great Link. The two of them get all gooey and link together in a sharing of emotion and experience. Odo agrees that he is home. Sisko and Bashir, meanwhile, are on another shuttle after 6 days of running on fumes. They are caught in a tractor beam, and the shuttle is opened by, guess what, O'Brien and Dax. Dax says that there are big things happening on the station, and they need to get back to DS9. Kira on the planet remarks how she's the outsider now, and the female changeling explains that they have had a rough history with solids and thus have become rabidly isolationist. They won't allow Kira to send a message from the planet. On DS9, Admiral Nechayev says that the Dominion's representatives are here to negotiate with the Federation and the other powers in the quadrant. The Admiral says that one of the founders has asked to speak with him. The founder, Borath, is of the same species as Eris. He explains that the alliance between the Federation and the Dominion will be beneficial to both of them. Garak comes to speak with Bashir and expresses concern over the Federation's alliance making with the Dominion and Cardassia's support of it. Tyrell, however, is furious because the Romulans have just been completely, like, fuck-off excluded by all of this. And Romulans never enjoy that kind of thing.
Romulans are the people who are excluding other people. You never exclude the Romulans.
Right, right.
You invite the Romulans, and the Romulans say, no thanks, I have tickets to the mat.
Yeah. With all these various tensions, the station is starting to boil over. Tensions are running high, and Nechayev says that they'll never have to worry about the Romulans again, which sounds ominous.
I mean, from Admiral Nechayev, it's just like, the first time I remember watching this episode, I just remember thinking...
Are they planning to blow up the Romulan sun or something?
I was like, oh god, she's one of the bad admirals.
Are there good admirals?
There are no good admirals in Starfleet. No. There is one good admiral in Starfleet. We will meet him later. I love Admiral Ross.
Yes. And I love also there's a point in this episode where Dax and Sisko are talking and Sisko's like, they're talking about admirals and like Sisko's talking about how like his dream was to become an admiral and Dax is like, that's a stupid fucking dream.
Yeah.
Admirals suck.
Well, and she's like, Curzon always thought you were a dumbass for having that dream and knew that you'd never actually want that.
So funny.
It's such a brutal exchange. It's so good.
It's you need friends who say, no, that dream was dumb.
Yeah. Anyway, back in the nebula, Kira finds that all of her attempts at sending out a transmission are being blocked by some sort of device on the planet. Odo is also frustrated because he's supposed to be learning about taking the shapes of other things, and it is not going well. When Odo talks to the female changeling, she explains their history of conflict and persecution by the Solids. She explains that they sent out 100 young changelings to explore the galaxy, and that Odo is the first to return home. Kira starts to explore the planet for the source of the interference and finds a big metal door that is impervious to scans. That's totally normal, right? So on the station, we have peace talks finalizing. But as O'Brien and Bashir have a drink, a Jem'Hadar picks a fight with O'Brien, and Eddington takes the Jem'Hadar's side in the fight. Sisko expresses frustration to Jake that the negotiations are happening behind closed doors, and Dax storms in to declare that she's been reassigned. Sisko busts in on Nechayev's office to ask why Dax has been reassigned and O'Brien is in the infirmary, and Nechayev says that the Federation is just straight up pulling out of Bajor, leaving it to the Dominion, along with the wormhole. On the planet, Kira watches as Odo changes from a bird into his normal form, and he is delighted by this. Odo says that he would like to stay, and Kira respects that, but she asks for his help in getting past the door. Because this is not a great place for Kira. not much creature comforts. Garak tells Sisko on the promenade that he appreciates his command on the station and that he'll be back soon, fighting against the Romulans and its new allies in Bajor. Garak says that he agrees with Sisko's disgruntlement at the treaty. T'Lure rushes to Sisko, calling for him, but she's shot by a Jem'Hadar, and Sisko gets into a fight with the soldiers. He's arrested, but Garak, Bashir, and Dax break him out. Garak escorts them to a runabout, but he's shot by a Jem'Hadar as they escape. They fire a spread of photon torpedoes at the wormhole, destroying it. On the planet, Odo observes the door, saying that it looks like it's meant to keep people in, not out. He's able to open it, and behind it is two Jem'Hadar. They escort Kira and Odo inside, where they see everybody on the crew asleep and being administered by two founders.
Air quotes, founders.
Yeah, air quotes, founders. The crew's been put into a simulation to see how they react to Dominion incursion. The female changeling arrives to say that she's here to deal with it. The changelings are the Dominion. They are the founders. They would never be hunted again. By being in power, they will never be hunted again. And they will impose order on a chaotic galaxy. The changeling asks Odo to join them in the Great Link, but he refuses and demands to have the crew freed. The female changeling does so, noting that no changeling has ever harmed another. The crew is freed. Odo promises to explain as Sisko and the crew beam back up to the orbiting Defiant. The changeling tells Odo that he'll always be an outsider to the Solids and that they will be joined again. And she says that they are willing to wait until the time is right.
So, something that I find interesting is the implication that there's some stuff with this episode, but there's an idea that the Dominion were aware of the Federation before the wormhole, and the wormhole coming up accelerated all their plans.
Yeah, it's kind of wild.
They weren't ready. They were expecting to encounter the Federation in 200 years when Odo would make his way back.
Yeah, which is wild.
Oh yeah,
the idea that Odo gets his like love of order naturally, but it's somehow funny. It's very funny, but the idea that he's somehow like the least fascist, wet fascist we'll ever have on this show makes me crazy.
It's so. If you had
it makes
to
me
guess,
so mad.
It's so funny.
It's just
all these things. It's like, oh God, I mean, I hate this guy. And he's like, oh, now this is like a regular mall cop. He comes from a family of Nazis.
Yes.
He's the normal one.
Right? It's like, you know, he's like predisposed to paranoia and then like had a very traumatic upbringing, but like overall mostly means well, sort of. And then the rest of the founders are just like, yes, yes, the only way that we will have freedom is by subjugating the entire fucking galaxy.
Which, cool. That's a totally normal thing to do.
Yeah, very rational response.
Yeah.
Oh, boy. So it's funny.
Remember when I said that Odo, you know, sometimes responds to things in a rational way and sometimes dramatically overreacts?
Yeah.
I guess he comes by that naturally, too.
So I think it's funny that in your notes, Anna, you're like, well, the VR simulation plotline is pretty obvious. And meanwhile, I'm watching it the whole time and I did not see it coming at all.
I cottoned onto it the first time I watched this episode.
When I watched it, I noted, I like distinctly noted, like, time doesn't seem to be passing the same way, and thought nothing of it. What I thought was, I was fairly certain that Dax and O'Brien were changelings. I had I kind of had it somewhere in my head that there were more changelings in the Dominion somewhere. So I was pretty sure that they were changelings because it seemed too easy the way that they got out of that base.
Mm-hmm.
And then
mm-hmm.
I assumed that Nechayev and Eddington were changelings. I think it's very funny, by the way, that like, all of the, in their shared hallucination, Eddington is like this enormous, huge ass.
It really is. And I suspect, and like everybody is like, everybody has their personalities dialed up to 11. It's like,
yeah,
like
Garrick, I love Garrick.
Garrick is no. Well, Garrick's being like a more obvious spy, and they're pulling that for Bashir.
Yeah,
because this is just, I mean, this is just his fantasies now.
Yeah. Well, if it was, well, hold on. If it were Bashir's fantasies, it would be a very different kind of scenario. It would be a holosuite kind of situation, not a spy novel.
Oh, okay.
I mean, we don't. There were whole swaths of that, you know, that funky time that we didn't see on screen. So,
yeah, that's,
you know,
fair. All right, that's fair.
But yeah, like everybody's just a little bit more.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like there's a lot of clues, but it's, I feel like they balance it pretty well, such that like it's not a twist that you'd never see coming. Like everything fits, but it's not like an obvious setup.
Mm-hmm.
But I did manage to catch it the first time I watched the episode.
I totally get being able to, because the time thing is the one that really stands out. Like there's one scene where you hear them talk about like weeks having passed, and then the very next scene,
and then you're there, Kira, with Kira being like, "You've been a bird for like 4 hours."
Yeah, Kira and Odo, are talking about like the fact that it's been hour. They've been here like 16 hours or something like that.
Yeah,
and it's like, hold on.
Yeah,
hold on.
And it's like, what? Which sort of fuckery is this?
Yeah, and as it progressed, as things got progressively worse, I was like, look. I did not watch this show, and the deeper into it we go, the less I know about this show. but I'm fairly certain that the Dominion does not control Bajor. I'm fairly sure that they stay on the station. Like, I think I remember that. So I clearly something's happening here.
I do think that, like, one thing that was eventually smart, that was a smart choice, was making the Founders changelings, is that there is going to be a great sense of paranoia to go over.
Oh yeah.
The series as it goes along. Cause
yeah,
I mean, what's better? What is better than secret changeling?
Right.
Yep.
No, it's dope. It really does introduce a real sense of, like, wartime spy paranoia. Uh-huh. If anybody could be something else. Yeah. I mean, I am interested to get to the next episode where we will see how the Federation actually responds.
Oh, buddy.
Buddy,
let me tell you, this is not a spoiler. There is no Dominion in the next episode, but it's something I can't wait to tell you the name of it at the end of this episode. Do not look it up.
Yeah.
Do not look it up.
I'm just curious how the Federation, outside of, like, fantasy, how the Federation actually is going to respond.
That's going to be the theme of season 3.
Yeah.
Basically.
All right.
Yeah, there is going to be, like, I think it's a, I'm not to give anything away, but it's a slower build than I think you might expect.
Okay. Yeah, I guess I'm used to prestige TV where they would condense that down into one episode.
Yeah. They definitely have a, like, they have a plan, but I think it's slower than you might expect, I think, which is, not to put, like, a tamper on it, but.
I want to talk a little bit about the behind the scenes stuff in this that starts in this episode.
Yeah.
Ronald
D. Moore. Yeah. I think he's been on like one or two episodes before, but, like,
he hasn't written anything. This is the first time he's been credited, as a director or writer or teleplay. Maybe he was writing on episodes before this, like in the writer's room, but this is the first time his name's cropped up. Those of you who watch a lot of sci-fi, and God, I hope that's why you're listening to this, probably know Ronald D. Moore from Battlestar Galactica. You may, if you like to imagine having sex with Scottish men from the 19th century, know him from Outlander. It's a weird...
And if you like alternate history and NASA, he's the creator for all mankind.
Yeah.
He really has not, like...
He does not have, like, a single thing. He has a pretty good range.
Yeah, I mean, he has got a lot of bangers. Ronald D. Moore is part of one of my favorite, like, the only like real miss on his thing is
Caprica.
But there is an interesting path not taken involving Ronald D. Moore, which is after DS9 is done, he starts working on a couple things. And he was doing, like, this is around 2000. He started developing a pilot for Dragon Riders Pern.
Fucking shut the front door.
That would have been cool.
And it was going to be for Warner Brothers. And they got decently far in pitching it. Until Warner Brothers, like, got their hands on it. And according to Moore, it's like basically they just wanted another Buffy. So they started changing a lot of stuff to the point where it's like it did not resemble the books at all. And he basically, like, it got to a point where he's like, I refuse to work on this anymore. So there is like this is the great Later, I think it's next year, David Icke approaches him and they start working on doing a miniseries for sci-fi for Battlestar Galactica.
Somebody give this man back Dragon Riders of Pern.
Okay.
Here's what I'm saying. Outlander is basically already halfway there just with dragons.
I feel like you sort of need to rewrite some stuff for Pern, like with the world building, just to like make it like there's some stuff that is just fucking weird for modern audiences. But I have such a like a soft spot for that that it was like,
no, it's incredibly weird.
Yeah,
but I mean,
I read so much of that at an age where I really should not have been reading.
But those books are, I especially feel like we the haven't, early
like,
books are. About
this before, but are we all like big? Were we all like you like reading beyond like the original trilogy and the Harper stuff? Like,
oh yeah,
oh yeah, yeah. Okay. I read like everything the library had like the ages of like,
oh, I love this,
9 and 12.
Yeah, no, I've read all of them. I've probably read,
oh
like,
gosh, I love this,
I'm all like, the Wares of Pern like 7 or 8 times.
I don't recollect any of them other than vibes.
Oh man, I can tell you some stuff about the Pern books because those books got lodged in my head.
They are the Pern books by the time that like they get far enough on, reach like you could tell me anything about this series and I would believe it. Like yep. That level of, like for like a niche sci-fi series, it has some of those batshit things happen in it. That, like, I'm surprised it's not, like, a trivia thing at more times.
I'm shocked that nobody's made it yet, honestly. I mean, I get that there's a CGI.
Yeah, I think it's, like, thing. The thing is, like, you have to, like, there's a bullet that you have to bite of, like, we have to CGI so many dragons, and that's so expensive.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, I mean, look at, okay, like I said, you get Ronnie D. Beck. Aaron, I'm sorry, but fuck off. No, don't you dare cut this.
I'm sorry. We got all our spaceship stuff out of the first one. Now it's Dragon Riders of Pern time.
You get... I'm not even joking. Ronnie D's already proven he wants to make it.
Yeah.
He's already made 2/3 of it with Outlander because most of the early Dragon Rider stuff is basically just Flar and Lessa being horny for each other. Gosh. And... going on quests.
I think it might also be too horny for modern television.
Have you watched any Outlander?
I'm sorry.
Yeah. Have you watched any Outlander?
Have you gotten anywhere near
book talk? There are legions of people that are all about.
Yeah, like, but see.
The pure smut that is like pure fantasy smut, like. Fairy creature plus woman.
I don't think we.
But bridging the gap to make a TV show out of it is like very difficult, though.
No, I 100% agree.
If that market exists,
I 100% agree. I'm just saying the Dragon Rider books are not nearly that level of horny. Like they are an entirely acceptable level of horny. Okay. The horniest thing about those books.
I think it's because it's like, I don't think there's anything on television right now that gets away with like, we are horny for supernatural reasons and we're going to bow down.
Like, yes, you literally got me before I could say comma, except for the breeding flights.
Yeah,
that's a problem. A bunch of guys. Go gay for their green dragons
is
a thing that we're probably gonna have to do something about.
I'm sort of kind of okay that Anne McCaffrey has passed because she was super litigious about fan work. But my God, could you imagine Tumblr on with like dragon riders breeding? Oh God, that was, I need it. I give it to me.
Someone's going to do it because, like I said, that series is basically Outlander plus Game of Thrones.
Oh, yeah. It's, oh, gosh.
I mean, it's got dragons. It's got all kinds of fucking. It's got fantasy shit. It's got everything. It's wild to me that nobody has pulled the trigger on this yet. And you get Ronnie D up in it. Anyway, rewinding way past this, Aaron, again, I cannot emphasize enough. Don't you dare cut this Dragon Riders of Pern stuff.
Gosh.
Ronnie D. Moore comes in, and I know enough about this series to know that he sticks around for the long run, and the show is better for it. So welcome, Ronnie D. Yeah. To DS9. It's nice to have you.
He's gonna be.
It's also dope to see Jonathan Frakes directing an episode.
Yeah. Not to spoil anything, but Jonathan Frakes is going to be on the other side of the camera as well this season.
Oh, that's fucking exciting! Yeah. I love Riker. I love his character. I love the actor that plays him. Yeah. I'm all for him showing up in any way that he wants to.
Yeah. That's going to be a fun one because
it's a good episode.
The way that it's going to line up is, like with the episodes, is it's going to be the episode where Riker shows up, then a Locks on a Troy episode.
Shut up.
We're going to have so much fun.
That's amazing. Oh, that's great. Oh, man.
Yeah. I'm looking for the, like, we have, I like how it's like, okay, we've got all the mysteries out of the way for the first two, like that we're playing the first two seasons. Like, what is the Dominion? What is, like, where does Odo come from? And now we actually get to, like, get into the meat and potatoes of it, which I'm excited for.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
All right. Do we have more to say here or as evidenced by our, like, no kidding, oh my like God. 15 minute long digression about the Dragon Riders of Pern. Are we done?
I think that we are good to cut it here. I'm looking forward to season three. We've got...
It's a strong season opener.
Yeah, it is.
Yep, very.
All right. Ladies and germs, next time we will be covering episodes 3 and 4 of season 3, The House of Quark and Equilibrium. Until
I'm
next
sorry,
time.
The House of Quark?
The House of Quark. Yep.
The House of Quark.
If that's going the way I think it's going, this is going to be a good one.
I cannot wait to see you like message me when you watch this.
Yeah, you need to live yeah, Discord I'll, this.
Yeah.
All right. Until next time, just keep circling. Keep circling. Just keep circling.
Just keep circling.
Yeah.
Just keep circling.
Just keep circling. Just keep circling. Just keep circling. Just keep circling.
The Babylon Project is an independent production. All views expressed on the show are our own. Clips from the original show remain property of the original owner. Music information can be found in the show notes. The rest of the show is licensed under a Creative Commons 4.0 share alike no derivatives license.